Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
We're going to be covering Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes, we are. And we have our usual disclaimers, which include that there will be cursing. Possible.
There will be spoilers for this movie. Again, if you have not seen any Star Wars movies, I highly recommend starting with the original trilogy being 4, 5, and 6. Start with 4, because that'll give you an entree into the universe, and you know, you'll get a sense of what you're seeing, say, in Empire and stuff like that. So, but I don't recommend starting with the Phantom Menace. We're going to talk about that probably at the end, because we failed to rank after we watched
it. Well, I mean, start with where episode 4 lands with all of that. Obviously, it's 4-3-2-1.
Yeah, it is. So that was easy. That spoiler. Also, we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink, Natalie?
I've had it on the podcast before, but it tastes a little different than it usually does. It's called A Kiss on the Lips, and it's a frozen cocktail that I got on a Disney cruise once. Or a Royal Caribbean cruise.
I can't remember. It was Royal Caribbean.
Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah, but go ahead.
It has mango margarita mix. Usually it's a little bit more sour or sweet. This one's definitely more mild, but it's still good. And grenadine and blended. And so the reason why is because frozen carbonite, frozen Hoff, and a lot of kisses on the lips, some of which are inappropriate.
Yeah, that is definitely going to be something we talk about in this episode. So I'm having something I'm calling a Vader Old Fashioned, or Old Fashioned Vader, as the case may be. It is a version of an Old Fashioned that I kind of made up on my own. I had thought about using your father as a smoker that I bought for him for making Old Fashions. I don't think we've tried it yet, so I'm kind of reluctant to be the first person to try it. So I didn't. What I did instead to get a little bit of smokiness with this is I did a peated whiskey wash on the glass. I used double oaked bourbon, grenadine, and a combination of chocolate, mostly chocolate, and spiced cherry bitters. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah,
you like it?
Yeah, it's okay. Chocolatey.
It's chocolatey. We like chocolate. And this is obviously, it's red also for Darth Vader's lightsaber, which I think is totally appropriate. So
yeah,
we are going old-fashioned Vader.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie's all about.
It really is a lot about Vader.
Mm-hmm.
So I have mentioned on a previous podcast episode, I think it was episode 2 about Star Wars, that I discussed that this is my favorite Star Wars movie, and it still stands. It is. And after watching this, it still is.
I have to point out that based on my pro-con list, this is actually beating out New Hope.
Yeah.
Which,
it's a very long pro list.
It's a very long pro list, and there are very few cons, and that's even with me making tons of
this is
tons
nitpicking.
Of
cons for me.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, I even with that, even if I edit out all of the editorial stuff about both the pros and the cons, the pros definitely outweigh the cons here by a lot, which was not as true for New Hope. So
I think the thing about New Hope is that we can't help but see it as bridging the gap between the prequels and the original trilogy. And so sometimes that can make it be like, well, this inconsistency. And we don't blame New Hope for that, but you can't help but think it. Meanwhile, Empire Strikes Back is so rooted in the original trilogy that you're not really thinking about all the other stuff that you have learned from the prequels or anything.
Yeah, there are a couple of inconsistencies. We're going to talk about them, but it's not glaring and slapping you in the face in the way that it is, you know, when you're looking at New Hope and comparing it to the prequels and thinking, this is a better movie, which it is, but...
Oh, certainly.
But you know, you're kind of thrown out of the whatever the timeline was supposed to be when you're watching them in order like this. If you just watch the original trilogy, you should be fine.
I have some issues with the last one, but...
The last one's... Oh, well, spoiler. My opinion, the last one's not that great. But
it's not. And thinking about all of the shit that goes down in the last one, I'm just like, oh, God.
Well, I haven't watched it in a while because it's not a favorite, so...
It's true. So let's go through the synopsis of Empire Strikes Back. So we begin the... It clearly is some time later because, as I will explain in my prose, clearly time has passed and relationships and friendships have evolved since New Hope. Which I love that they aren't just starting them in the same place as they were at the end of New Hope, because these are characters that actually evolve, unlike the prequels. And unless you're Anakin, and then you get like slapped in the face and is just like, all right, you're evil now. And meanwhile, we're here in actual character land, and these people have evolved. And so we are on the ice planet of Hoth, hiding out from the Empire. The Empire is after them, particularly Vader, because he's like, this one kid blew up my entire plan with the Death Star stuff. We also learn in this movie that he is working under somebody. And not that he didn't already have somebody like kind of a superior to him with Governor Tarkin, but it's clear that there's a bigger boss as well. And so he's going after them. They're on the hideout, and there are several different things that happen on Hoth, but the main crux of everything is that they get attacked and they have to split up. Han, Leia, Chewie, and C-3PO go one way, while Luke, who has gotten a vision from Obi-Wan,
who he still is calling Ben, I'm annoyed,
whatever, dead naming him. Well, not dead naming him, it's like actually not, he's actually doing what Ben kind of wanted, Obi-Wan wanted, but so he has gotten a vision from Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he's in peril during when he gets this message, and Obi-Wan simply does not care. He's just like, hey, you go to Dagobah, you find my old master Yoda.
That's one of those continuity errors. But yeah, sure.
Yeah, the way that they frame it is that he was learning directly under Yoda,
right?
Which they don't do.
Yeah, the apprentice to Yoda, he is not. And I'm saying that like Yoda.
Apprentice to Yoda, you're not. But he gets that vision, and so he's like, I'm going to go to the Dagobah system before meeting up with everybody, because I need answers, and I trust Obi-Wan. So, fair enough. So he goes off to Dagobah while Han, Leia, and C-3PO, R2 is with Luke. Meanwhile, the rest of them is trying to escape the Empire as best they can. The Empire's right on their heels. They are having a lot of difficulty maneuvering through like a meteor shower an asteroid field. They hide out in one of the asteroids. That's a whole thing. But a lot of stuff happens there, but a lot of it's mostly to progress. It's not even like to progress the plot. It's to progress the characters and the relationships.
Yeah.
And so skipping over quite a bit, they go to Corellia is what it's called.
No, Corellia is where those big ships are made. So they end up
Pod City.
Oh, Bespin. Yeah.
Bespin. That's it. We literally talked about last one.
Yeah, where Lando Calrissian is.
Yeah.
That's why you're thinking it starts with the C.
But yeah, no. You're right. So Han's like, oh, this is my old friend Lando. I hope that he's not mad at me for anything I've done in the past. Let's see what happens.
I will point out that that is also kind of a Freudian thing, because Solo, the movie, the separate
Star
movie,
Wars story.
Star Wars story, which we are also not covering on the podcast at this point in time. Han grows up on Corellia, where they build those giant ships, and that's like one of those.
That's why I was thinking of it.
Yeah, that's why you were thinking of it.
And of course, in that
he meets Lando and all this other stuff. But
also meets Daenerys Targaryen. But we're not going to talk about that.
Which he shouldn't.
We're not discussing that.
No.
They go to Bespin and they meet up with Lando. Lando says he's on their side, but isn't. He sold them out to the Empire, who showed up first. They were very unlucky. The Empire went into light speed, and went there first because I guess they knew something.
Yeah, they must have known that there was some connection there, but there's no explanation for why they know.
It's clear that they were nearby because their light speed is not working. So they just went to a nearby star system and were like, all right, you seem to have information. Or maybe Lando has a big enough name to want to get him on side anyway. Either way, they show up, and then Han and Leia and all them show up afterwards. They get captured by the Empire, tortured, even though they're not asking for any information, which is a little bit of an interesting tactic, not to even ask, hey, where's Luke? But they don't ask any questions, apparently. But they are being used as bait to lure Luke in. Meanwhile, Luke is on Dagobah, and he runs into this weird elf-looking thing, and it happens to be Yoda.
Yoda gaslights him big time.
Big time, but he also, like, how lucky is this son of a bitch to land exactly where Yoda is?
That's the Force working for
you. That's the Force. Yeah. So Yoda starts training him. He doesn't believe he's ready, and Luke
comes. Yoda doesn't. Yoda does not believe Luke is ready.
Luke believes he's ready, but Luke is proved wrong at every turn. And he has a training montage kind of thing. Not really a montage, but just a few scenes that we see him training and learning what the Force is, how he can wield it, how powerful someone can become with the Force.
Right, and he has some visions while he is training with Yoda. Yoda has doubts about, and has, there's all these discussions with the hologram of Obi-Wan.
It's not a hologram because they actually use holograms. This is a Force right. ghost.
It's a Force ghost, but whatever. It looks like a hologram. He has a number of visions, one of which includes a fight with what looks like it's Darth Vader, but it's actually Luke fighting himself. Which, you know, all of us struggle with good and evil. I guess that's the point. Mm-hmm. And he has a vision of bad things happening to Han and Leia. And that causes him to go protect them, to go and save them. And Yoda and Obi-Wan are trying to talk him out of it. Like, you're not ready. And he's like, fuck it, I'm going.
But I promise I'll come back, I promise.
Yeah.
So he goes to Bespin and falls right into the trap. But before that, Leia and Han are told about them being bait, and Han is going to be used as a test subject for freezing someone in carbonite, because that's Darth Vader's big plan. He's going, if Luke doesn't go to the dark side with him, he will freeze him in carbonite, and he will no longer be a threat.
Well, he will also take him to the Emperor and have the Emperor do things to him, I think, is the point. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm going to convince you or kill you or something.
Yeah, the plan is not necessarily to kill Luke. They just want to sway Luke and, if not, capture him, incapacitate him, and then get him somewhere else.
Right.
So
take him to a secondary location.
Exactly.
That's the plan.
But they tested it out on Han. Han tells Leia Leia tells Han she loves him, and he's like, I know. And then he gets frozen. And
but there's kissing, and it's cute, and it's very cute. Sweet, and we're going to talk about that in prose.
We will definitely talk about that in prose. And then, so Han is going to be taken to Jabba, who we mentioned in New Hope is the big slave trader, big head honcho mob boss on Tatooine, who had a bounty out on, well, Han worked for him, but then he would put out bounties for Han if he didn't do what he wanted.
Well, right. So there was a bounty out for Han, and that was based on the fact that he had dumped his, like, a load prior to New Hope. So, like, he had dumped a load and Jabba wanted his money back, and he was promising, oh, I'll pay you after I take these people to, you know, they're just passengers. I'm just going to take them to wherever it is that they want to go.
Obviously,
and
he didn't go back.
I'm going to pay you back. And he never does that. And so the bounty, I guess, has gotten higher. But we've also seen Jabba in Phantom Menace. So just in case you're thinking this is not a three-line character, in some weird, fucked up way, he is. But yeah, so there is a bounty hunter that's going to be taking him to Jabba.
Boba Fett.
Yeah, we don't get his name in this. He's just Bounty Hunter, as he's referred to. But we know who he is. We know he's Boba Fett, and we know that from the prequel series. Which I guess we needed. I don't know.
The one who saw his dad, Django, get beheaded.
Yeah, whose dad is like the clone for all of the clones. And
although that's never maintained. It's like not, the fact that they were clones is never maintained because no. I don't know why they just use real people now.
Yeah, I guess they're able just to impress people into service because they need more bodies. I don't know.
Obviously seems more evil to me, so might as well do the more evil thing if you're the Empire. So anyway, Luke and Vader fight, and Leia, C-3PO and Chewie escape with Lando, who's now on their side, because he never meant for things to get that far. It was only because the Empire showed up first that he even allowed any of this to happen.
Well, right, and Darth Vader, like, keeps moving the ball on him, and he doesn't like it.
Yeah, he doesn't like that at all. So they escape on the Millennium Falcon and are determined to find out where they're taking Han, even though they already know that they're taking him to Jabba, so gonna figure that out. Meanwhile, Luke is fighting Vader, and they have this whole back and forth, and it gets to the point where Vader's like, "You don't know, do you? Obi-Wan never told you. I'm your father." And he's just like, "What? No.
Yeah, Luke's like, "I know you killed my father." He's like, "I am your father. Search your feelings."
And often James Earl Jones,
oh my god.
And that's such a Mandela effect because everyone assumes it's Luke, "I am your father." It's actually, "No, it's I am your father." Which, I mean, I'm okay with either. It doesn't really matter. No, but
I am your father.
Yeah. So Luke freaks the fuck out, and his hand gets chopped off by Vader, you know, father-son bonding, and then he falls down a hole and is almost falling to his death, but he calls out to Leia with the Force, which he doesn't know is going to work, but it does, thank God.
Well, he tried calling out to Obi-Wan, and can't do shit, he's dead.
Well, right,
but Obi-Wan told him, "I won't be able to help you if you go right now." And so he called, and but he gets no response from Obi-Wan even in when he calls out to him in those circumstances.
Not so even though I told you so.
Yeah, no, he calls out to Leia. Leia clearly hears him, and makes the Lando turn the Millennium Falcon around, and they are able to save him.
And he's able, with the new technology that the original trilogy has, they don't have just metal hands like Anakin got, because of course father son bonding, but he gets his own, like, it looks like a human hand. It's also so that they don't have to deal with more effects later on, which fair. But yeah,
totally.
Although in I think the sequels it's just a metal hand, because I guess it was easier for him to maintain.
I don't know, we're gonna take a look. But in any case, so Luke and Leia are going to hang out with the rest of the rebels while Luke recovers, and Lando and Chewie are going to go try to find Han in the Millennium Falcon.
Wearing Han's clothes.
Yeah, okay. We're going to talk about some of those things in our pros and cons, clearly. But that's basically the movie. So what were your pros?
Music, oh my god. Especially, they add the Imperial March on this one, and it's just so good. It's such an evil sound. The cast, again, is fantastic. All the people that we were talking about last movie carry over to this movie. Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, James Earl Jones, all of them. Great. The twist, I love the twist. I think that it makes Luke question himself enough and also feel betrayed enough by people who he trusted to, again, jade him a little bit more. It's more this whole series, this three movie series is really just dissecting his character and like making him question everything. The first movie, his aunt and uncle who raised him died, and now he is finding out this vital truth about himself, but not by the people that he trusted, by the person who it actually is, who he doesn't trust. And he's also Vader was like, "Hey, why don't we rule the galaxy as father and son?" It's like, no.
Once again,
this is his only move.
And I think
we can rule the galaxy together. It's like, no, dude.
That's not what I want, man.
No one really wants that the way you want that.
And you still haven't made a fucking move to do it. like the muscle for the emperor. Dude, you could do better.
Yeah, so I love the twist, even though it wasn't necessarily set up in the first movie because they didn't know they were going to have another movie. The twist is fine. It's maintained. It sucks that he was not told before this, but it's fun for the audience to find out with everybody else. A peek behind the mask for Vader. I really like that we get to see way more of his character because he's so one note in the first movie, which is not a bad thing. That's what he was meant to be.
He's a villain. He's kind of he's like a pure villain at that point.
Yeah. But now we're getting to see, again, like we even get to see a little bit of the back of his like bald head that has been like ruined.
He looks like soft cheese, like cottage cheese a little bit. The back of his head is mushy and weird looking.
It's gross looking, but and that's the point. And so we get to see him more as a human, and clearly he had a child. So oh my god, what does that mean? And who was this woman? We find out. We've already found out at this point who this poor woman was.
Yeah.
But there, I like that we get a little bit more of like, okay, he's still subservient to somebody. Even if Governor Tarkin is gone, he still has somebody over him and lording over him. And it's so funny to see that his goals have never wavered of like, I want to rule the galaxy, but I want someone to do it with, man. I want it to be family. it was going to be Padme. That didn't work out. It was going to be literally anybody. And hey, I have a son and my son didn't die. So would you look at that? That's crazy. And
it really is kind of crazy, but okay.
This is funny. But yeah, I also like that we see how much power he has, because in the first movie, and I know this was a limitation because of effects and stuff like that, we get to see him force choke somebody, but we get to see it in this movie of like from like an over Zoom. Like, it's so interesting.
It's so great that he can kill people over Zoom. Yeah, the force is strong with him.
It also proves how like scared people are of him, and that he is an imposing personality and an imposing threat.
And in the fight with Luke, he is doing that thing that we had seen in the fight with Dooku, like for the first time. We'd seen like using various materials around him to throw at the enemy and throw them off and
it's just a better fight.
It's a better fight, definitely.
Which I will discuss later. Darkness. I like a movie where in a series when there is a moment where the heroes lose and it's like a major moment. For example, like in a long running TV series with kind of like Once Upon a Time, where they have this season that's full of darkness and they lose and they have to pick themselves back up in the next half of the season or like next season. I find that interesting. It keeps me engaged. And so because if they won all the time, I'd be bored. I mean, it would still be fine, but it would be a little disappointing. Meanwhile, in this, I like that we have so many blows coming our way. Like with Luke, first of all, lost his hand. Second of all, found out that this threat, the villain of the story, is his father, and he has to reckon with that emotionally. And with what he's going to do moving forward, now that he knows, is he actually going to kill him? Is he actually going to be able to stop this threat? Or are his feelings going to get in the way? We also have Han being frozen in carbonite. Like, that's, everyone feels very helpless in that moment. And they're going to have to figure something out.
Right. All of our potential heroes are neutralized, which is not true. Like, when you compare this with Attack of the Clones, I'm just going to do this within the same series of movies, that set of prequels, Attack of the Clones ends with they have been beaten by Dooku and it's not looking good and whatever, but they have a clone army
and also tons of Jedi.
Padme and Anakin get married, and it's like there's a little too much hope still in Attack of the Clones for it to have the kind of stakes that we're seeing in Empire.
I think Revenge of the Sith attempted to do something similar, but again, they had to clear up all the loose ends and stuff like that, so it didn't feel like a real slap in the face finale, at least in my opinion. But Either way, it also, it just makes things feel more realistic of like, you're not going to win every time. And there are going to be darker parts of yourself. Like, for example, when Luke goes into the cave and is fighting with Darth Vader, who turns out to be himself, like a lot of it's just metaphorical. Like he's fighting internally.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that interesting.
Sure.
Character development and relationship development. I like Luke looking inward and honing his skills a little bit more and being knocked down a peg. Because in the first movie, yes, he is a naive learner and he's doing all this stuff, but he still ends up being the person who saves everybody and still does everything correctly, even without any help.
You know what I mean? Real training. It's like,
exactly. Yeah. So he's like a little bit of a Mary Sue in that situation. It's still fine. Even though Mary Sue, no. Mary Sue, it's like a movie term or something. It's a media term where someone who has not been trained in anything just happens to be amazing at it.
Hmm.
Never
heard of it.
A lot of people call Rey in the sequel trilogy Mary Sue.
I will have to examine this further. Go ahead.
I've heard that term before.
All right.
Either way, so him actually being knocked down a peg by Yoda and be like, yeah, you're not as good as you think you are, bud. And you need to, these are the steps that you need to take within yourself for you to become better. And I think that that's really important for him to know. Han, he has obviously the romance arc with Leia, which I love, but he also has this growing loyalty and like fealty to these people that I don't think he has ever had before. And in the first movie, like he was doing everything for money. It was all selfish and greed motivated. And even him coming back was a sign of good things to come. And we see like the fruits of that labor where we start out the movie with him going out and risking his life trying to find Luke on a ice planet and him saving Leia from like falling debris and like being like, you're coming with me. We're going to figure this out. Even though he said he was going to leave and like try to get away from everything so that Jabba wouldn't find him. But again, he's doing all these selfless things and he allows himself to be tortured and he never gives up Luke's location and he never, even though he doesn't know it, that he gives up nothing and he allows himself to be sacrificed for them. He doesn't even really fight back because he knows that other people would get hurt instead. So it really is building up his selflessness and his loyalty to the group. Meanwhile, Leia also has the romance with Han, but she also has this other role as a general, and
yeah.
She has her being a leader and not being the bratty kid anymore. She has big responsibility and she's willing to sacrifice herself, as she always has been, for the greater good. But she also lets Han help her be a little bit more selfish with herself and a little bit more self-protective. And
well, he's protective of her, so
yeah,
you know, so, part of what, and we see it with this escape from Hoth. So right at the beginning, they're on the planet Hoth. Leia is full-on general. Han has said he's leaving, and she's clearly pissed about it. And they have this adorable argument in the South Passage. They have a bunch of like bickering kinds of arguments that really develop their attraction. And I'm going to talk about that in my prose as well. But I feel like, you know, this really kind of shows, you know, that time passage thing that you were talking about, because that's an excellent point. And we didn't have to see everything, but we know it based on how these characters are interacting. There are expectations in their conversation that clearly have been created over time. And, you know, she has expectations of him. He, you know, has desires, expectations of her. And they
also have expectations for themselves as well.
Right. Like long-term goals and stuff like that. But he practically has to physically drag her out because she is one of the last people left on Hoth and she's still trying to get, you know, communications done and, you know, have the ion cannon firing and all of this stuff. And Han's just like, she's coming with me. You know, I'm going to get her out safely. And despite the fact that the Millennium Falcon's having all kinds of technical problems, he does it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of cool. I'm going to talk about this more.
But I do love their relationship and the development that it gets in this movie, because there were hints at it in the last movie, but it will build into another one of my best parts. Luke training with Yoda. I really like him having to
Oh,
build his
see, I kind of
skills.
hate it. Go
Well,
ahead.
I like the general idea that he has to build his skills rather than just being naturally gifted.
Yeah, sure.
And does it take a little bit of time? Yes. Should it probably have been a little bit shorter? Yes. But I think you also get some of the best lines and more introspection in that.
Great lines. I think what I don't
I have a
like,
lot of lines later
yeah,
on as
but
well.
what I think I don't like is Dagobah as a set. Like, Hoth is a really cool planet. Literally, but it's a really cool environment in which to have this movie. Dagobah, it is kind of creepy. I feel like it's a little too confined. Maybe it's a little too small. A little
What would you have
too.
chosen?
I have to think about that. You go ahead and keep talking about your first.
But yeah, I like, and again, I like that Yoda knocks him down a peg. And I guess I understand what you mean about Dagobah, but I think that they just needed a something different from what they have done in the past or will do in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much they had planned ahead for the next movie, but there is a foresty kind of thing in the next movie. We have like a lot of different elements. We've already seen desert, Arctic, all that stuff.
We're
I
going
think,
with jungle.
yeah, we're going with jungle. And I think that's fine. I don't know what else they would have done with it, considering the kind of character Yoda is, like what would be isolating to them. Maybe it's just like a large ocean. I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking something more like more water rather than less.
Like an
This is
island.
gunky, muddy,
Yeah.
and I'm not saying that's bad. It just, and maybe that's it.
I think it's just supposed to
Luke
just,
feels very confined in,
yeah.
like, you're
In
restricting me.
Yoda's
Everything's
house
restricting me. It's
and
very small.
yeah.
Everything, yeah, and you feel it with him,
That's
I
why he
guess.
leaves. It's because he, it's one of the many reasons why he leaves. But he does promise to come back, so that's something. But yeah, I like that the humor is still spot on to me. I think that, especially with Han and a lot of
Oh
his
my
lines,
God,
I
yeah.
will bring up the lines briefly in a minute. And also, I've already grazed at this, but clearly stuff has gone down between movies, and I like that we're acknowledging that, but not like just exposition dumping about it. We get it through natural conversation with like Luke and Leia, that not Luke and Leia, Han and Leia, about like clearly there's more romantic tension now. There, so things might have gone down between them in the past. Obviously, I don't think he's like kissed her yet,
No.
but there's definitely tension leading up to something like that. Again, Luke and Han clearly are closer friends now, and Han is letting down his guard a little bit around Luke and Luke around Han. And again, they're all buddy buddy with each other now. They are a true group. They are the core group, and they are treating each other as such. Meanwhile, in the prequels, we barely see anybody together, and I think that's another thing. They do
Yeah.
separate them in this movie, but it doesn't feel bad. It feels like they have built them up as characters with each other enough, and have the knowledge that they have grown with each other already in between movies, that it doesn't really make a difference that they have like split up for this most of the action of this movie. Which I don't think the prequels did as well.
I don't either, and I think, the only relationship we saw, at least in theory, built up was the Anakin Padme one, which,
Yeah.
maybe that was the point. I don't know.
I don't know. But we needed more Obi-Wan
We did
and
in so
Anakin.
many
Yeah,
ways.
so many ways. Great lines. Here are some of the lines I wrote down. Then I'll see you in hell. That's, most of these are Han or Yoda lines.
Han's fantastic.
I thought they smelled bad from the outside. Laugh it up, fuzzball. Who's scruffy looking? Here's some Yoda. Judge me by my size, do you? Do or do not, there is no try. I like that. And then, of course, I love you, I know. Those are some iconic
Yeah,
lines from
you're
this.
living out. I would rather be kissed by this walking car,
I
by
can
a
arrange that.
wooden, you scruffy looking
effort or
yeah.
That's Leia, by the way.
Yeah. Here's another thing. Seeing new planets and fully immersing ourselves in them rather than just having them as a backdrop.
Yeah.
I think that's why I don't mind Dagobah as much, because they at least use the environment to their advantage of, like, he has to swing from a vine, like George of the Jungle. Or Tarzan, I mean. I was talking about, like, the Walmart brand Tarzan.
But, yeah, Tarzan.
But I think that... And that's another thing with the prequels. Like, you have a lot of planets that you go to for, like, fun set pieces or whatever, but you don't feel like you've fully immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, except for Tatooine, but that's just because they have established Tatooine and you have to wear specific outfits for that. We have that here, but with Hoth, everyone's wearing a different outfit and is, like, adjusting to the climate. They're interacting with the world around them. Dagobah, same thing. He is interacting with the swamp. R2 is dropped into the swamp and he's dirty. And it's, again, they're not afraid to get down and dirty. And I think that's why I don't mind Dagobah so much.
Yeah,
and
Cloud City is...
Cloud City, they all change into, like
fancy clothes.
I do notice that Leia changes back into her Hoth outfit, I think, out of protest.
Although that's off... The whole thing with Leia is off screen. It's disappointing.
So is Han's torture, but... Yeah, but it's clear that Leia, I feel like Leia should have just been with Chewie and C-3PO if they weren't going to, like, have her be actually tortured.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I agree.
Anyway, Chewie is the sweetest boy.
Oh,
I love Chewie.
He's fantastic. Love Chewie.
I think Lando's an interesting addition as well. He's not my favorite character, but I think that he seems like the right kind of, like, this, if Han was going to have a friend from his past, this would be his friend from his past. Also very shady, also not very trustworthy.
They do develop that a little bit in Solo, and I like that.
I do like that.
Yeah, there were some really good things about that movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll cover that in Rogue One at some point, but not right now.
The lightsaber fight is significantly better, mm-hmm. and it's for the reasons that you've already discussed of, like, Vader actually uses the environment around him. Again, they're not afraid to get their hands dirty. They will throw shit at you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the choreography is just crisper and way less just poke, poke, stab, stab. And also, because it also helps that Luke is a bit more experienced as a fighter now with mm-hmm. having trained with Yoda a little bit more. And so he thinks, he also is way too, like, his head has gotten so big that he's like, I can do whatever I want. I'm a Jedi now. It's like, no, babe, you got to work on your stuff. But,
and he didn't believe Yoda or Obi-Wan when they said, you're not ready. And he finds himself in this fight with Darth Vader, and Darth Vader's, like, pulling stuff off of walls to throw at him. It's like, oh shit, I didn't know that was the thing.
I didn't know you could do that.
Wow, okay.
And then finally, bittersweet ending. I like that it leaves things open. We already know that there's another movie coming. These were super, super popular. So I don't feel bad that there is a cliffhanger. And I feel like that's something that the prequels were afraid to do, oddly enough, having a cliffhanger like that, which is bizarre because they also knew that they were going to have this many movies.
Yeah,
they could only have three. So it's like, all right, well, we might as well make things interesting and, like,
put people. You're not going to have episode 2.5.
I feel like they just generally, and it's something that prequels in general are afraid to do, is to let characters evolve and then devolve for their original arc to be intact.
Meaningful, yeah.
Which is another reason why prequels don't really, really work for me all the time.
Well, I think some of it is that no one's backstory is a clean thing that you can easily tell. I feel like some people really do have significant change on their own that is not part of some obvious narrative.
Absolutely. And I think that, again, between movies, we saw that in this movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I've written down. All right, your turn. You have a lot.
I have lots and lots of pros, and this is mostly because I am in the habit of taking way too many notes on this. But again, I'm going to try to go as quickly as possible, as I seem to do with all of these. The crawl for me for this is both a pro and a con. I'm going to talk about both why. So the crawl for this is, to me, really good in that it's a good setup, again, for stakes, which, it talks specifically about Vader is after Luke Skywalker. Luke Skywalker's, been working with the Rebel Alliance, trying to stay hidden, but they keep having to go to all these places, and they're being hunted down. So again, we've got real stakes as opposed to the Trade Federation is blockading. I mean, it's not the shit we were getting with the prequels. The downside to me is this one is a tiny bit long, which I don't really love.
I think that I thought that they were all the same length.
No, like they're not.
Paragraphs.
No, one of them in the prequels is like super fucking long.
Some feel longer than others for sure.
And that's partly because the writing is not as punchy, but editing is helpful. But the crawl, I think, does a really good job of setting up what the stakes are and letting you know that time has passed and that they're having to go from location to location because they're being hunted. I think that's important, and it also shows the things that you've already been mentioning. Music always fantastic. Again, the interval interlude music is really good at setting the mood. The Han and Leia chemistry, it's you wanted to have something remotely like this with Padme and Anakin.
You didn't.
You weren't even close.
You didn't even really try.
You weren't even in the ballpark. I mean, admittedly, I know they're different characters, but you have some similar elements to work with. And I know you want it to be different because, a different people, different relationship. Anakin's a little more fucked up. Okay. but, Han's pretty fucked up too. but for reasons that are purely the actors, I think, in this situation, because it's not like if you just read this dialogue on a page that would really read in the charming, romantic way that it is portrayed on screen. Hoth, I think, is a great location. They use this environment really, really well. They've got these tauntauns that they ride on that are they're actually not like animals that we see all the time. It's not like an obvious camel that you've made into something that's less hairy, which is what we saw a lot of in the prequels. We're seeing an actual development of what kind of creature would live here. There's a bad creature that tears up Luke to explain why Luke has that change in appearance. So there are actual stakes there. There's this possibility like, oh my God, Luke might die. And when you're watching this movie, because you have seen people like actually die in the first movie, and this is only the second movie at this point, there is that possibility. Like, you don't know that Luke's going to be the hero all the way through. It's like, hey, maybe something really bad is going to happen to him. He doesn't really have very obvious plot armor. He does have some, but it's not super obvious. I wrote down in this way, God, I love Han Solo. I do. His loyalty to Luke, his willing to just take on, like, Luke's out in the cold and he's going to die in the cold. And it's like, fine, I'll see you in hell. I'm going to go save my friend who, like, is a general for you. He's a commander. He's somebody that you should care about whether he's going to die in the cold or not. The only person who's going to do anything about it is Han. Again, his interactions with Leia, that that whole thing in the South hallway, and then him talking about it afterwards. And I love Leia trying to make him jealous by kissing Luke. I don't like the kiss, but I like the fact that she's trying to make him jealous because clearly she is feeling it for him and she wants to deny that. But the way she does it is action, and I like that. C-3PO and R2-D2, again, you're getting more humanity from these droids than you got from like a lot of the characters that you saw in the prequels. I mean, you're getting this concern that Luke is out in the cold, that Han's out in the cold overnight, where I think the odds are 735-1 that they're going to die overnight, all of this kind of stuff. And both C-3PO and R2-D2 are clearly emotionally concerned for them. And that emotionality that we get from them, that they're clearly part of the group as well, and that they are tied to them in an important way, shows up in so many ways in this movie. Like, you've got you know, Chewie has to put C-3PO back together again. You've got R2-D2, you know, doing stuff with Luke, and then also, you know, letting them know that, oh, the hyperdrive on the Millennium Falcon was deactivated. Like, he knows that this ship is important and I need to be doing these things to make sure that our group can get away. Just that kind of character development is there. Chewie has great character development in this. Mm-hmm. I love that for him. I love Chewie as a character. I liked what they did with him in Solo, the movie. I thought that was good. And that doesn't come into play here, but it makes you understand why it matters. And the fact that Yoda knew him, it's a little bit weird to me, because you don't get the sense that when they hear that Luke has gone to Dagobah, or he's, you know, coming back from Dagobah or whatever, I think that comes up in the next movie. There's no like Chewie, like, oh, Yoda, I know him. There's none of that. There are real stakes. And I have a number of places where I've starred things that are real stakes that are created in this movie, that are tangible, that are meaningful for the characters that we are seeing developed. One of them is that they need a search party, that they, you know, you need to go and find Luke. He's not going to just magically appear somewhere. You don't think that he's just, there's a real possibility he could get hurt. There's a real possibility he could get hurt in this fight when the Empire is coming on to Hoth. And they've got Imperial walkers, which I absolutely fucking love visually. I had an AT-AT in my office that was battery operated and it would wander around my office sometimes. It was made out of Legos that my son had put together, and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. The Imperial officers trying to kiss Vader's ass. I love this office dynamic. It is hilarious and toxic and things that we see now all the time. But the fact that everybody's trying to suck after him and he just kills them if they don't do a good job. You know, it's hilarious because it's just not the way things are supposed to be, and yet somehow this is still a corporate existence for the world today.
Unfortunately,
yep. Leia as a general really works for me. Mm-hmm. I really feel like she has come into her own through like taking down the Death Star and whatever has happened since then. That she's really established herself as a commander and as a role model in the Rebel universe and the Rebel Alliance in this period of time. I think that's fantastic. Luke is a creative thinker in battle, which, again, we hadn't really seen that before. But he figures out, like, hey, we're not going to be able to shoot down these Imperial walkers. We're going to have to trip them up. Let's, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And he does it on the fly. He does it quickly and is able to have some success with it. Darth Vader really hunts them down personally. Like, he personally goes to Hoth and is going to take them down on Hoth. This is very much
personal for him.
Very personal for him. And this is not the point at which he knows that Luke is his son.
I'll discuss that in my cons.
Right. I mean, he totally fucking should, but he doesn't. And so he is, you know, it is clearly his personal mission to make sure that they are eliminated. And that's kind of interesting to me because it raises the stakes again. There are real stakes for having to repair the Millennium Falcon mid-battle. Like, they have to battle their way out of Hoth. They are not able to get the hyperdrive working. And, you know, like, while the ship's getting shot at, you know, things are breaking down and you've only got two guys who know how to fix this thing. And they're having to like do it on the fly in the middle and hope for the best. And, you know, it adds to the tension. It's really well done. And Han, I love this. This is one of his great lines too. Never tell me the odds. Mm-hmm. Because C-3PO is all about telling people the odds. And he's like, never tell me the odds. I agree with you about Darth Vader's helmet being off. It does make him a lot creepier. Han and Leia on the asteroid. That is way more compelling to me than the parallel story of Dagobah. I'm sorry. I understand the importance of having Luke trained. I don't think it is done quite as well as the Han and Leia story on while they are on the asteroid trying to fix the Millennium Falcon, because there's romance, there's kissing, there's and they're all just trying to work their way toward, you know, being able to survive. The Emperor. He's like his introduction, because again, in this universe, we've never seen the Emperor before. Like when these actually came out. So he is really creepy. He tells Darth Vader that Luke's his son, which again, I think it's a continuity problem. I agree with you. And I put that but a continuity problem. But I find his intro, like the fact that he exists, which is something we really didn't know, is makes things darker. I wrote down many of the same lines you did from Yoda. I think they're great. Boba Fett following Han and Leia, and because he is following them like off of the Imperial ship that they like hide on, because he's a bounty hunter and he knows what to look for. I think Boba being the smartest of them is really kind of cool. I like the interaction between Lando and Han. I think that their interactions are good. Bespin is very cool looking. Chewie saving C-3PO, as I mentioned before, I think is really good. There are real stakes in Han being frozen.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know if he's going to survive. And even like in the ideal universe, when you're sitting there, in between movies, like after this movie and before the next movie, it's like, are they going to be able to get Harrison Ford back? Is he just like going to be dead? Is this going to be one of those things that we lose? I love you, I know, fantastic. And one of the things I like about what they do with this is that the music for that is one of the most triumphant performances of the Imperial March that we hear, because Han being frozen is a triumph for Vader, and the fact that that's the overlay to their love story is like, wow, okay. I love Leia yelling "It's a trap." That's the line that comes from these movies, and I think those are great. It's a trap. Lando finally coming around and being a good guy is good. I like Chewie choking Lando. That makes, because again, the loyalty of the character developed for him is great. I like the Luke and Darth Vader fight much better, as we've already discussed. There are real stakes in Luke losing, and we've talked about that, but I think that that's important to note. Luke dropping away, and again, it bothered me a little bit when they tried to repeat that same sequence with Yoda in Revenge of the Sith, like, oh, he drops into the garbage chute or whatever, and they have to come pick him up with a ship.
It's just
like
a cheap knockoff.
Yeah, it was kind of poor to me. I love Leia going back for Luke. It is a fair question that Luke has, because he keeps asking him, like, why didn't Obi-Wan tell me? Why didn't they tell me that Darth Vader is my father? Is that really true? And it does make him question them on top of everything else. And I like that it took R2-D2 to fix the hyperdrive in the Millennium Falcon.
He's been talking about it all movie, and yes. No one's listening.
Exactly. It's like... but yeah, those are my friends.
Oh, R2. Sorry. R2. I was thinking of C-3PO. But no. C-3PO has known that there's something wrong with it all movie. And R2 was the missing piece.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that sweet? Mm-hmm. Here are my cons. You don't kiss him. I know what's coming. And I don't like that there are multiple lip kisses between two certain characters.
That would be
that we already know. Yeah, that we already know are siblings if you watched the prequels. I have heard that the watch order for some people are 4, 5... 1, 2, 3, 6, and then the sequels, which gives away the secret that Leia and Luke are siblings.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
It's an okay. Like, I guess I understand to a certain degree. You don't want to start with the prequels,
yeah.
But it's interesting. Anyway, inconsistency. Yoda didn't train Obi-Wan. What are you talking about, man? What are you talking about?
Again, it's a prequel flaw, but it's not
this movie problem exactly. It's just it's something I'm pointing out.
Yeah,
random Jedi flipping. It still is rampant in every single one of these.
Darth Vader flies in this.
That was very funny.
Very funny.
Because
he has a cape.
Mispronouncing Han. I do not like this Han propaganda. We have already established, everyone has established, that it is Han. And then as soon as Lando starts saying Han instead, Leia starts saying Han. And again, it's the whole mimic thing that we are seeing in that. And it's just like, why?
Stop
why are we doing that stuff? It's kind of like the Princess Leia of it all in the last movie that I hated. So yeah, that's another thing. I think that they easily could have policed that more or just made it a Lando thing.
Yep.
Why is Lando wearing Han's clothes? That's weird. You could get your own clothes. And also, it would be interesting if Vader was obsessed with finding Luke because he realized he was his son after last movie. After being in such close proximity, seeing each other after he kills Obi-Wan, looking over at Luke being like, huh.
Know your mind.
Search my feelings. I know it to be true. That is my son. Holy shit, Padme gave birth to a son. Instead, in this movie, it's the Emperor who's like, oh, by the way, he's the child of Anakin Skywalker.
That's right. Child of Anakin Skywalker. Not you. They don't even say it in that sentence.
I think it would have been better if they made it more vague of like, you know who he is, or that could leave it open to maybe he's the chosen one like Anakin was or whatever. But no, what he means is that he's your son and he has capabilities beyond our imagination and we need to get him on side. That would have been just fine. I think that it, since they knew what the twist was going to be, obviously they weren't going to give it away there, but again, they could have made it vague enough to keep the twist and then also make it like everyone's on the same page instead of it being revealing information.
It could have been kept a lot.
Or I looked into it for you and you were right.
Yeah.
Or something. Not that the Emperor would do that for him, but you know what I mean? It's like just something else. Like, find out his last name. It's like, oh, by the way, Skywalker, you know your last name? It's like, what?
Well, right. So, yeah, but then, again, he never acknowledges in their conversations that Darth Vader is, in fact, Anakin Skywalker, which, again, stupid. I mean, you know, it's kind of like Obi-Wan referring to him as Darth Vader. Oh, Darth. You know, like.
Oh, Darth.
Oh, Darth. It's a little strange the way those things are portrayed. And I think that that's poor. I'm sorry. Did you have other?
No, that was my last con.
Okay. So my cons, and again, I wrote down more than I should have because I wrote down more just in general. There are some additional inconsistencies with the prequel. I mentioned some of them already. Yoda did not have Obi-Wan as a Padawan. Leia and Luke kissing, deeply upsetting. Luke leaves a pilot to be crushed by an Imperial walker. Like, he doesn't pull him out. No, what he goes back for is his lightsaber. And then, like, you may or may not be dead, but you're going to get crushed by the Imperial walker. Which, you know, okay, maybe, but it kind of diminishes him a little bit to me. Dagobah is a bit meh, or it's a bit campy to me, the way it's set up. It's a little fake jungle. It's a little too small, I guess, and we talked about that a little bit. I don't really like that. Yoda gaslighting Luke into thinking that he's not Yoda, annoying. Yoda acts like he's had never seen like a light before, you know, an electric light. I mean, he really acts like he is, oh, technology new, you know. It's very weird. He doesn't look like, it's a major inconsistency to me that he's not acting like he has ever seen a lightsaber or used one, or but he says for 800 years I've been teaching Jedi, and it's a little weird to me that where he's acting like he's never been on Coruscant, he's never been in bigger, better place. Obi-Wan talking to Yoda the way they talk to each other, I think, is a bit stranger-like. And it's not really like you would expect two guys who, this is my mentor and this is how I talk to you, that it seems a little weird. The Luke random flips, you've already talked about that. One of the things I thought thought was kind of weird that they have this place on Dagobah that's strong with the dark side. They repeat that in the sequels, spoiler, that idea that a place can be strong with the dark side. But it doesn't really come up anywhere else that a location is strong with the dark side. It's usually a person. So the fact, oh, you have to go in there and face the dark side. It's like, well, yeah, it's just right there. It's not something that you carry with you, or it's not an internal thing caused by hatred or whatever, which is what they say 90% of the time. So I feel like that's kind of a continuity issue. Obi-Wan doesn't know about Leia. There's a conversation between Yoda and
there's another. Obi-Wan. It's like, yes, we know.
Yeah, and you know, Obi-Wan's like, oh, he's our last hope, and Yoda's the one who says, no, there is another. And it's kind of like, and Obi-Wan's kind of surprised, like, oh, is there? Like, come on, we know this from the prequels. At least
you know this to be true.
You know, search your feelings. Lando selling them out, I think, is bad. Darth Vader fucking with Lando. I think that's what the whole Imperial universe does, but I find it annoying. Boba shooting at Luke. So as Leia and Chewie are being taken away from where Han's been frozen in carbonite, there's a whole bunch of the Imperial guys taking them away. And Boba Fett is taking Han away in his frozen, levitating, whatever thing. And Luke has shown up and he's kind of like sneaking around trying to figure out where Darth Vader is or how to save his friends or whatever he's trying to do. And the first shot that is fired, and it's not like he confronts anybody. He's still kind of hiding. But the thing that smokes him out and actually, you know, is the first shot is fired by Boba Fett. Like, it seems a little strange to me that would, of course, also be a warning to Luke. This is before Leia has said it's a trap. There we go. The Empire using Leia as a human shield. They're terrible.
That's funny, though.
The screaming, no! thing bad.
Oh, by Luke?
Yeah. I just feel like the delivery's a little, I don't know.
I didn't mind it as much on this watch. I don't know why.
More kissing between Luke and Leia, even after Leia has professed her love to Han, I think is weird.
Okay.
There is a Force voice at the end. Darth Vader speaks to Luke, and Luke responds, "Father, like, why would you do that? I mean, you know, you don't trust what he said to you. You don't believe that, and you don't like him. Why would you call him father? I don't understand that. Why would you say Darth or something? I don't know, or like
Obi-Wan,
or like why he continues to call Obi-Wan Ben? Why? I don't understand. Lando and Chewie together. And it's kind of like May, and they're going to get Han. I mean, I don't know. It just seems a little strange that they're going without anybody else. So there you go. Those are my worst parts. I have to confess that because my pro list is so much larger on this movie than it is on the other movies, this is probably my favorite.
Yeah, it's number one for me. It's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That's my ranking so far.
Yeah, I have a feeling things are going to get a bit more mixed up as things go on.
But yeah, next episode is not going to
it's
have.
It's going to be very different. No, six is not
going to ruin the order.
It is, but where it fits is anyone's guess, because that's always one of the movies that I have a hard time placing.
Yeah, and because I love the characters so much, but the shit, there's so much shit.
There's some really good stuff, too. So we are looking forward to talking about it, because there's really good stuff. And there's like some stupid stuff, and then there's good stuff again. So, hey, we have so much to do. We hope that you join us. And
cheers.